This episode of the Intelligent Rebel Squadcast was brought to you by Black America, Inc., a Trillion Dollar Nation. Black America, Inc. is a piece of literature that details and illustrates the socioeconomic solutions that Black Americans can implement in their communities today. Whether it be being captains of our own industries, creating our own political parties, or just learning to strengthen our overall health and wealth, Black America, Inc. is what Black Americans and Americans in general need to get to the next level in 2017 and beyond. For too many years, we have been talking about the problems and not the solutions. For too many years, we have been pointing fingers at each other without talking about the solutions. This is why Black America, Inc. is important. If you're ready to build yourself up, rebuild your community, head on over to Amazon.com and order a copy of Black America, Inc. today.
The música de Harry Fraud.
Yeah. Man, this nigga, yeah. You think it's happening right now? You think it's happening right now? Wondering if we should even smoke this one. Cause I don't think my dog can handle it. I might just have to keep this motherfucker myself. Slid through like bacon grease.
You! Yes, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. You intelligent, rebellious people. It is your boy, your host. Doe Dupes coming live again for episode 14. Seems like a lucky number to me. I don't know. Integration. We talking about integration today. So, because I care about Black America and because I want to see us win, sometimes you got to look back to see what happened. You know, try to get a different picture than maybe what you learned in school or maybe what people told you or just maybe all of the footage that you may have seen of hoses and dog attacks and cops clubbing people and attacking people, mobs, all of this stuff. So I decided to look at this era again in Black American history and see what I could pick from it and see from my own eyes and what I perceive to be one of the major things that happened to Black America that was a bad thing, integration. So little brief synopsis or whatever, but you already know what to do for this episode. Roll something, light something, and get ready for the Intelligent Rebel Squad Cat.
That you buy from. When I finish stunting, it's your turn. It's about how much you earn. That should be your number one concern. Well, then, it really ain't no guidelines. You should be writing your own book like me, cause I don't ride with these youngsters. I got my own look. Opinion just like assholes. Everybody got them, and I hate when niggas make their problems. Everybody problem, nigga, telling me like I'ma really care about his problems. All I care about is I be cause my share for tomorrow, yeah.
Clapping on another one. Still counting up from the last heist. Rain the day for sure to come. When it do, I bet I had my fucking money right. Yeah, clapping on another one. Still counting up from the last heist. Rain the day for sure to come. When it do, I bet I had my fucking money right.
Alright, so integration. And it just so happened that we're talking about integration on Martin Luther King Junior's birthday on MLK Day. So salute to Martin Luther King and all of the works that you've done. My man, I appreciate it. So we talking about integration, man. And we gonna talk about, you know, how integration has actually affected the Black community as it stands in 2017. So let's talk about before integration first. You dig? Before integration, it is proven, it's a fact, that Black families and Black businesses were doing extremely well for the time. Black households, I want to say 83 of Black kids have both parents in the home. 92% of Black parents were married. You dig what I'm saying? So let's stick right there for a second. Now, we already know that the Black nuclear family or the Black family period has been in shambles for a while. Black men and Black women are not getting married as much or in the same amount of numbers. It's a lot of single parent households, and those elements already affect the way we, you know, achieve in this country. When a father or a mother is outside of the home, particularly the father, because that's what we've seen the most of in the Black community, we see the decline and prosperity because there's a lack of a man in the home. There's a lack of guidance. There's a lack of leadership. There's a lack of masculinity. There's a lack of manhood, fatherhood in the home that affects the child and the mother off rip. It makes it much harder for the mother to get on in life. It makes it much harder for the child to get on in life because somebody, a person that was there to create the child is not there to raise the child and raise a family. So that automatically hurts our family. But as you can see, before integration, we had a tight family dynamic. At the very least, I'm not saying that America was perfect for black people in these times, but when it came to our community, when it came to our families, we were closer. And, you know, after integration, you see 50% of black kids live in a single parent household. I was one of them. And 72% of black kids are born to unmarried parents. Also, I was one of those. And I can tell you from personal experience how my life has been dramatically changed growing up without a father consistent in my life and doing the things that he needed to do to raise me. You know, it was a lot of things I had to deal with coming up, dealing with my masculinity, dealing with being a young man in the world, particularly a young black man in the world. So the father is very important. And if you were to ask a child from a single parent household and a child from a two parent household, you will see that both of them would want both parents there. And I'm not comparing a bad single parent household to a good two parent household. That's unfair. I'm just saying a person like myself who did grow up pretty well, even though my father wasn't there, versus somebody who grew up pretty well when their father was there, we would automatically say that having both parents is way better than having one. It makes common sense, period. So after integration, our family is falling apart, which in turn means our community is falling apart. A lot of divorce, a lot of just babies out of wedlock and things of that nature are running rampant in the community. And I know a lot of people at this point have gotten so used to it that marriage seems like something, you know, that's faux pas, basically. Like, that's some corny shit. That's what old people do. Or that's some traditional bullshit that we don't need to follow in 2017. Let me let you know something. Yes, the institution of marriage in a lot of ways is to make a lot of money. I'm pretty sure a lot of y'all watched the Adam Ruined Everything episode about weddings and things of that nature. I get that part of it. The marketing part, the advertising part, the dollars part of marriage, I totally get that. Even the price of a marriage license is pretty expensive. However, what is more important than all of that is the fact that both parents are raising a child, preferably in the same household. So I would much rather a couple who may not be married taking care of their children together, as opposed to a married couple who, you know, are separated or fighting or just toxic parents altogether. The main point is being able to have both parents there, to have both parents in the household. And because of single parenthood being so prevalent in the black community, it becomes second nature almost. It becomes something that we're just used to. You know, we don't even ask about our fathers, or children who come up without one parent becomes used to it. Because, you know, their friends, their family, their cousins, whoever may not have a father in the home. So it just becomes something that they're used to. And if these are little girls and little boys looking at this behavior, the little boys feel like, well, shit, my pops wasn't there, you know, so there's really no necessity for me. Then you have little black girls looking at it and saying, well, I'm pretty much set up to know that I'm going to have to take care of my own children, you know, on my own once I get to that age, once I become a mommy. You dig what I'm saying? And that goes into the psychological, you know, aspects of the breakdown of the black family. And this, like I said, is after integration. This is after we have marched and fought and demanded us to be able to patronize white-owned businesses, white schools, and you know, white institutions all over the country. This is the results of that. You know what I'm saying? And the black family is so, so important. I don't even want to, like, just let that go or let that be a fleeting thing. The black family is very, very important. Black mothers and black fathers have to work together in the household and then in the community to be able to have parents from across the street or down the street to be able to look after your child while you're away or something like that. Just to be able to have a more close-knit community is very important, and we lost that with integrating with white people, or just integrating, period. We lost that. Then, when you want to go to the business side of it, the economic side of it, it gets even worse, or, you know, it's just as bad on that end. So before integration, black businesses were thriving. This is the era of Black Wall Street. You know, Black Wall Street started, I think, 1830, you know, around that time. And it thrived for almost, you know, 100 years or 400 years. You dig what I'm saying? And then, of course, it was bombed. But, you know, something that I do try to relay, and I put it in my book, Black America Inc., A Trillion Dollar Nation. Go out there and get it, Amazon.com right now. You'll see, you'll hear a commercial about it later. Shout out to me. You'll see that black businesses were, you know, thriving at this time for a very long time. Hundreds of businesses in the community doing their thing. Here's an excerpt from historian Julia Walker. She says 1900 to 1930 was the golden age of black business. According to the National Negro Business League, the number of black-owned businesses doubled from 20,000 in 1900 to 40,000 in 1914. So just 14 years, it doubled. There were 450 undertakers in 1900 and rising to 1,000. Drugstores rose from 250 to 695. Local retail merchants, most of them quite small, jumped from 10,000 to 25,000. So as you can see, we're hustling and bustling. We're getting our businesses up. We're doing our thing. We're shopping with each other. We're buying black. All of the things that are now hashtags and popular to say, this is just what black people were doing as a function. This is what black people were doing as a second nature. They were able to just thrive amongst themselves because they knew the only people that they had were themselves. You know, back in this day, black people were, quote unquote, forced to deal with each other. You know, I was watched the entire Parks and Recs series over the past, you know, week with my lady. And there was an episode towards the end of the series where Ron Swanson and Leslie Knope had to be locked in a room together to basically hash out their problems that they had. And of course, by the end of the episode, they did, and it was all love. So that, you know, that serves as an example of what I'm saying, that when you have people in close proximity and they don't have anywhere else to go, or they're just basically regulated into one space, this is what you have when it's, you know, we all we got. That's that mindset. Like, yo, we all we have. We can't waste time shooting each other down. We can't waste time, you know, boycotting each other. There was way more togetherness because they understood at the very least that it was basically us against them. Now, after integration, African-Americans flocked to support businesses owned by whites and other groups, causing black restaurants, theaters, insurance companies, banks, etc. to almost disappear. Today, black people spend 95, which is more closer to 98% of their income at white-owned businesses, or just businesses outside of their community. So, automatically, after integration, and this shows even with Black Wall Street, they thrived for 40 more years, and once integration happened, the bombing wasn't even the lethal blow. They bombed this area and black people with the ingenuity that they had, rebuilt, and thrive for 40 more years. It wasn't until integration happened to where white business owners, white residents, etc., were able to flood these black places and take business. And as soon as white people got there, because of the psychological, you know, just the indoctrination of black people having insecurities towards white people, they felt like the white products were better. You know, I would have to assume, because of how fast they flocked to these white businesses, that even though these people just 40 years ago bombed us and rioted, they're beating men and women, they're harassing children, they're doing all of this stuff, lives were lost. And black people allowed them to come in because this is what some black people wanted to happen. They wanted integration, right? These white businesses come in and take over. They take over the economy. Black businesses are closing left and right. Imagine owning a business, you know, and thriving for a couple decades, and then having some outsiders come in, and the same people that would normally shop with you are shopping with them. when just a few years ago, or your dad, or, you know, one of your elders were bombed for having that same exact business that you're running. They were murdered in the name of economic prosperity, and your counterparts, your community, forsaked all of that, foregone all of that stuff to go shop with a white company. This is where you see the breakdown of the black dollar, and how we saw in the No More Free Content episode, where now they're focusing a lot on the black dollar because they understand how resilient, you know, they use that word, how resilient the black dollar is, and how eager and how aggressive, how aggressively black people spend money in America. So you already had these, you know, like the excerpt said, it was small businesses. They weren't huge conglomerates, you know, here. So a month of bad business, a month of bad numbers will surely have businesses closing up shop. And what happens when you're closing up shop? Now your storefront is for sales, for lease. So here come the people gentrifying, coming through, buying up the property and opening up shop. And black people just acted accordingly. Walked right into the same building that somebody that they knew owned just a year prior, 2 years prior, something like that, and shopping with the white owner who now operates that building. So much for integration. Because when I think about it, hindsight is always 20/20. Did we ever see, you know, a white Ruby Bridges? Did we ever see a white girl being harassed and picketed and screamed at and cursed out because she was going to a black school? Did we see white people coming to the black community and sitting at diners and getting milkshakes poured on them for it? No. So that lets me know that either one, black people, like white people, were indifferent, and two, that black people didn't mind having people come into their business and eating or shopping or whatever, or going to school, learning. So because of that, it shouldn't have been the black populace's responsibility to want to integrate into white society. If these people who love black people so much want to come and integrate and want to deal with black people, come to our side and give us money and business and things like that. You don't have to open up shop. Just come through and shop with us. If you really are down for, you know, integration, you're really down for black, why was it that black people were making the biggest sacrifices for this deal? For this deal to come together, we already went over the fact that our families were beginning to be dismantled. We see that our black businesses were being dismantled. Integration didn't help us. And glorious, you know, that it's happening on today that we're talking about this. It's not coming out on Martin Luther King Day, you know. Gotta have episodes in the tuck, you feel me? Just a quick break from the show to talk about my latest and greatest achievement, Black America Inc., A Trillion-Dollar Nation by A.R. Morton, of course. Now, if you've heard these past couple episodes, you hear how I've been raving and ranting about my book, man, because I'm so proud of it, man. It's such a dope piece of literature. It really details so many solutions that black Americans start implementing. So many solutions that Americans, period, can start implementing, yo. For real. At this point in our lives, when we seeing everybody else now in black America, prominent people blowing up, doing their thing, buying property, investing, and creating institutions or creating infrastructure that's going to allow us to have generational wealth from generations to generations to come into the world blow. That's what we need. So me being the nigga that I am, I looked at it and was like, you know, I got to contribute, man. I got to do something. I got to put something to paper. I got to be able to let my people know that there is hope, that there is solutions, and you ain't even got to sit there and dream about it no more. You can put your feet on the concrete and make it happen, yo. So that's Black America Inc., of course, man. So you make sure that you go out there, get you a copy, buy yourself a copy, then buy your peoples a copy, have your peoples buy their peoples a copy, and before you know, we all reading the book and we all putting the solutions out there. So that's what it's for, man. Black America Inc., man, for everybody. You, your enemy, your loved one, whoever. Everybody needs Black America Inc., man. Nobody's excluded. No matter what you identify as, your race, your gender, your sex, your height, your weight, it don't matter. If you're trying to build yourself up, if you're trying to build your community up, man, Black America Inc. is there for you. get you a copy. Go to Amazon.com right now, search Black America Inc. in the search bar, my bro, my sis, and get you a copy today, man. For real. Black America Inc., a $1 trillion nation. Martin Luther King, in a conversation with Harry Belafonte, voices concerns about his works in the civil rights movement and what he wanted to do and what he was doing with black people. And this is according to Harry Belafonte in his memoir titled My Song. And he said, you know, he was talking to Martin and he was a little downtrodden and saddened. So he, you know, asked him about it. And he said, you know, Harry, we, you know, fought for integration and it's looking like we're going to get it. But I fear that I've integrated my people into a burning house. And Martin was absolutely right. Martin, like a lot of religious people or people who have love in their heart, nonviolent, very peace-loving people, feel like all you have to do to like me is to get to know me, understand me. You dig what I'm saying? Let's talk, let's build with each other. And on a lot of cases, Martin was correct. You know, you see it today. It's a lot of interracial couples, and we'll get to that gay dude, you know, harassing that interracial couple in a second. But you see it. So people are going to be attracted to whoever they want to be attracted to. You'll see black men and white men getting along, white women, black women getting along. That's cool. But to make it a political stance, to make it something that the black masses in your mind should all be rallying behind, you know, that's what makes it a little bit, you know, forceful. Malcolm X even said that. He said, you know, if you're going to force a white man to embrace me, that's not real love. But if a white man comes to me and embraces me on his own volition, basically, or his own, you know, will, then that's real camaraderie right there, because nobody or no law made him or forced him to have to embrace me. That only breeds more resentment. You dig what I'm saying? When it's somebody that you don't identify with. When somebody that you love or somebody like that you are having affinity with, yes, it's better to, you know, talk it out as best as you can. But when you have such a violent force coming from the opposition, where they are pouring milkshakes on you, beating your ass in the middle of the street, throwing rocks at you and all this other stuff, I would be, you know, hard pressed to find somebody who would want to embrace or be forced to embrace somebody that abused them. It doesn't work like that. And I feel like that's what Martin felt like was going to be the solution. And it wasn't until towards the end, right before they murdered him, to where he realized that, you know, that may have been a bad idea for black people to get behind. And, you know, that's just a repeat of, you know, the last episode of the, you know, Hotep's been told you, you know, aspect of it. Because, of course, Malcolm X was speaking this type of stuff already. He was trying to let people know that, you know, forcing integration is not going to be good. So there were people out there who had foresight, but of course, because Martin Luther King was actually more marketable at the time, because he embraced certain groups of people, white liberals and things of that nature, that pushed his agenda or pushed that agenda further, because they knew on the back end that they could profit from it, you dig, that they were going to push it. So Malcolm X was the, you know, the dude that they was discrediting as much as they could. And, you know, of course, Martin Luther King was somebody that they propped up and wanted to use, you know, his face, his message and stuff like that to push their agenda on the back end. I feel like if we understand that the father of social integration, racial integration, has regrets about that, we need to take a look at that a little bit closer, because that was one of his main components. You know, that was one of his main, you know, stances that, you know, he wanted us to, you know, live together. Black boys and black girls and white boys and black girls can, you know, live together in harmony and all of that, you know, other stuff. And that's cool. I respect it. But when we're talking on a political level, you have to understand that you got to get yours first. You got to take care of yours first, you know. So towards the end, we had more of a Hotepish, if you will, Martin Luther King, where he was speaking on boycotting. Martin Luther King was speaking on boycotting Coca-Cola and Wonder Bread based upon their discriminatory, you know, hiring practices and just overall system of racism at the time. And I find it funny that, you know, in modern day, Coca-Cola is honoring Martin Luther King in Atlanta. You guys can, you know, look that up. But we do have a clip. I'll play the clip for y'all so y'all can hear from Martin's mouth and you know, what he wanted.
This is what we have to do. Now, the other thing we'll have to do is this. Always anchor our external direct action with the power of economic withdrawal. Now, we are poor people. Individually, we are poor when you compare us with white society in America. We are poor. Never stop to get that collectively, that means all of us together, collectively we are richer than all the nations in the world with the exception of nine. Did you ever think about that? After you leave the United States, Soviet Russia, Great Britain, West Germany, France, and I can name others, the American Negro collectively is richer than most nations of the world. We have an annual income of more than $30 billion a year, which is more than all of the exports of the United States and more than the national budget of Canada. Did you know that? That's power right there if we know how to pool it. We do have an agenda that we must follow. And our agenda calls for withdrawing economic support from you. And so as a result of this, we're asking you tonight to go out and tell your neighbors not to buy Coca-Cola in Memphis. Go by and tell them not to buy sealed test milk. Tell them not to buy, what is all the bread? Wonder Bread. And what is all the bread come to Jesse? Tell them not to buy Hearts Bread. As Jesse Jackson has said, up to now, only the garbage men have been feeling pain. Now we must kind of redistribute the pain. We are choosing these companies because they have been fair in their hiring policies, and we are choosing them because they can begin the process of saying they are going to support the needs and the rights of these men who are on strike. And then they can move on town, downtown, and tell Mayor Loeb to do what is right. Now, not only that, we've got to strengthen black institutions. I call upon you to take your money out of the banks downtown and deposit your money in Tri-State Bank. We want a bank-in movement in Memphis. Go by the Savings and Loan Association. I'm not asking you something that we don't do ourselves in SCLC. Judge Hooks and others will tell you that we have an account here in the Savings and Loan Association from the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. We are telling you to follow what we are doing. Put your money there. You have six or seven black insurance companies here in the city of Memphis. Take out your insurance there. We want to have an insurance in. Now, these are some practical things that we can do. We begin the process of building a greater economic base. And at the same time, we are putting pressure where it really hurts. And I ask you to follow through here.
So, yeah, man. So that's straight from, you know, the Reverend's mouth. And, you know, moving forward on the economic level, as far as prosperity and things like that. I know a lot of people have the conception that just in the 50s, it was just terrible. And, you know, that's largely based upon the white liberal narrative of these times. What a lot of people don't understand that, you know, shoving slavery down your throat, shoving Jim Crow era media or entertainment down your throat, it's a psychological ploy to keep you in that state, to keep you in a secondary position, to keep you lower than them. You dig what I'm saying? So they'll give you something to be quote unquote proud of, like Hidden Figures. I'm personally not pressed to go see the movie because a lot of this media comes from the same studios and the same conglomerates that call y'all thugs in the news, that lie about Black Lives Matter and call them hate groups and you know, all this other stuff. They slander black people on a social level all of the time, but when it's time to make money from them, well, first of all, the slanderer makes money as well because of ratings, but when it's time to make the big bucks from the black audiences, here comes Empire, here comes Hidden Figures. You dig what I'm saying? Here comes the black media that allows you to, you know, pay them billions of dollars because the people on screen are relatable and allows you to have some type of sense of pride and self-love and being black and all of that. And it's corny that we have white studios and white conglomerates and white corporations telling our story or using them, and you know, to push our stories. It's totally backwards. We don't need them. I said that in the last episode. We don't need them. So I'm not pressed for that because I understand that they want to keep y'all in that mind state. So they give y'all the help. They give y'all the butler. They give y'all all of this, you know, menial shit. But they'll put it in the faces of great actors and actresses in the black community and y'all eat it up. I'm not going for those games. You feel me? I'm not with it because there are so many great things that black people did on their own without the help of trying to help white people get to the next level and all the other stuff. Like when you look at these movies, the premises are pretty much the same. Black people are trying to prove themselves to white people by showing them their expertise. Who gives a shit? Show your community. That's dope. If you know how to get to the moon, show people in the community so we can get to the moon. You dig what I'm saying? If you have this invention, if you have this idea, if you have this product, if you have this food, you have this beverage, whatever you have, if you have any type of skills, the first demographic you would want to, as a black person, would want to, you know, market that to would be the community. Now, of course, the community you have to patronize you and support you, and that's a responsibility of the community as well. But when you're a genius, when you're great, you definitely want to make sure your home team is strengthened. You dig what I'm saying? That goes back to even the Negro Leagues. They duped the players into thinking that the white-owned businesses were better and, you know, you should go play for the Dodgers instead of playing for your home team that you grew up in, you grew up around. You know the coach, you know the players. This is family, basically. This is your community, and y'all are rock stars in the community. But, of course, the black community pressured these people to go sign with the white-owned and get into the quote-unquote majors and all that other stuff because it seemed like it was more prestige to have white people co-sign you. That white validation has definitely hurt us. There was a black billionaire by the name of Samuel Fuller. He owned the Fuller Products Company. He's a publisher of the New York Age. He was a Pittsburgh Courier. He was the head of the Southside Chicago NAACP, president of the National Negro Business League, and a prominent black Republican. You dig? So that's his background. Billionaire. He was making, you know, soaps, hair products, things of that nature. Now here's how black prominent people or black people who were woke enough to let people know about the economic barriers or the economic importance of the black community were treated even back in the 50s. So, of course, to be a billionaire in this time, you got to get money from everywhere, you know, everywhere, whites, blacks or whatever. During the 1950s, it says Fuller was probably the richest African-American man in the United States. His cosmetic company had $18 million in sales and a sales force of 5,000, one-third of them white. It gave training to many future entrepreneurs and other leaders. It doesn't make any difference, he declared, about the color of an individual's skin. No one cares whether a cow is black, red, yellow, or brown. They want to know how much milk it can produce. So, despite him having a third of his workforce being white, despite him, you know, saying that race doesn't matter, you had a group called the White Citizens Councils, who boycotted him. And the thing is, they only boycotted him after they found out he was a black man. Ain't that crazy? People, you know, shoot themselves in the foot. I'm giving your people a job, but you want to boycott me. Whatever. So, in the 60s, he was inducted into the National Association of Manufacturers, right? And in his acceptance speech, he said this: "A lack of understanding of the capitalist system and not racial barriers was keeping blacks from making progress. Negroes are not discriminated against because of the color of their skin. They are discriminated against because they have not anything to offer that people want to buy." Now, saying this in the 1960s, and it says 63, so it was a year before civil rights was passed. So this is another instance of Hotep's been told you, meaning that somebody who is thinking outside of the box, who is successful, who is trying to help people, you know, with him having, you know, thousands of employees, clearly trying to help the community and the economy overall, says, yo, fuck skin color, bro. Just be able to have something to offer to the system. That's what I said in the, you know, previous episode. Just to have something. You know, like I said, the Chinese had Chinese food and, you know, other things. So after he said this, black people started to boycott him. It was crazy. You know, so he suffered, you know, all of these setbacks and stuff like that. And, you know, he had to basically go out of business. And just serves as another story of people not realizing the power that they have. So you have a time now where people are being pimped on the emotional level to want to integrate and all of this other stuff and go through getting your ass beat in the street, while a rich black man is telling you, like, nah, just offer something to the system, sell something. Now, hey, I'm sure that after a while, because this black man was giving white people jobs, that they would have just had to shut the fuck up or get fired. And all that would have been is that you just hire the other one third of black people. Who cares if white people boycott you? That's fine. White people pretty much, by and large, boycott black people, not intentionally or whatever, just because they don't shop black. So who cares, right? But of course, again, the lethal blow was black people boycotting. This plays the same way with Smoocher. You dig what I'm saying? And you see that with the way people are treating Steve Harvey, the way people are treating Kanye West in relation to, you know, just meeting with Trump and saying favorable things towards Trump. You know, they pull up, you know, Malcolm X quotes to try to use that as relevance and stuff like that. And it could be true. I truly don't think Trump is that big of a mastermind, though. I think Trump is very transparent when it comes to his dealings and his agenda. It's no reason to just be called a coon or Uncle Tom just because you met with the president, a white president. You dig what I'm saying? And it just so happens today, Martin Luther King Jr.'s son, Martin Luther King III, is actually meeting with Donald Trump today. So let's see if the son of Martin Luther King is going to be called a coon, or if he's going to be called an Uncle Tom. You dig what I'm saying? Let's see if they take it that far. I hope they don't, because it's just ridiculous. You dig? But I do want to speak on the whole incident that I tweeted, you know, the video of the seemingly gay dude. You know, there's no proof that he's gay. Dude sounds definitely gay, though. He definitely sounds gay. So, you know, you take that however you want it. Gay dude walks up to an interracial couple in a black-owned restaurant, by the way. This is a black-owned restaurant. And begins to disrespect and harass them just for sharing a meal as an interracial couple in a black-owned restaurant. This is disgusting behavior. He thought it was, you know, it was pressing on him. You know, he usually doesn't, you know, even speak to interracial couples because he's just so disgusted or whatever the fuck he felt to say to these people. And I'm here to tell you right now, I would have whooped son's ass. I would have beat the shit out of him for disrespecting my lady like that. Called her not even human, less than this. And, he, you know, why are you not dating black women? Let me tell you something, gay nigga. you're not dating black women. So I don't even understand how you can even fix your fucking gay face to try to tell another black man what he's not doing when you're not even doing it. And this is what I'm talking about with this fucking fake ass pro-black shit, man. Y'all niggas is not really pro-black. How are you over there disrespecting a black man who's never disrespected you, who don't know you from a can of gay paint, and you sitting here talking shit about him, but you supposed to be pro-black. Your mother was black. You think his black mother would appreciate you talking to her son that way, nigga? Absolutely not. And I'm telling you right now, that pro-black shit is gonna get your asses killed out here. You keep running around thinking that you fucking Malcolm X because you got an at name and all of that other shit and you got hashtags in your bio. Niggas die every day, B. Every day. And you could be one of them for being disrespectful or for some shit you learned on the internet. Don't get your ass killed or get your ass beat up because you want to be motherfucking Khalid Muhammad, nigga. Don't do that. For real, because you run up on the wrong person one day, they're going to clap your shoulders, nigga. They're not going to want to hear nothing that you got to say. But at the same time, you niggas know who to do that shit to. You knew son was docile because you probably was over there clocking the nigga the whole time, staring at him, waiting for your food. Hopefully that you bought something out this black-owned restaurant. Since you so fucking outraged, hopefully you bought a plate or two, nigga. They bought some. In that moment, that white girl is pushing the black demographic farther. She pushing the black community farther just from buying some chicken or whatever they was eating. She doing more for black people than you are right now making this weak-ass video, nigga. So we have to just understand, man, we need to focus on ourselves first and build ourselves up first. Because as we can see, integration has been largely a failed mission. And that's coming from the person who was pushing for it the hardest. So take heed and understand where we at now. And understand that integration did not do anything but destabilize the black community and ruin our businesses. Now we need to revitalize Black Wall Street. We need to surpass Black Wall Street. From here on out, we should be spending a lot of our money. You don't got to be all of it, because people got responsibilities and stuff, and people like brands that they like, you know. I don't even hate white owned businesses. I just want the black owned businesses to thrive more than any other based in their communities, because the more black people shop with them, the more other people will too. The more other groups will. We seen that with the No More Free Content episode. Our content is lit on a mainstream level. Let's be the ones pushing it out there. I recently took a trip to the beauty supply store out here in Philly. And yo, I haven't been in one of these for some time now. It's been some years. And now it's a whole new level. I was reading the Nielsen report, I want to say for 2015, where they said 18% of the $1 trillion over $1 trillion that black people spend in 2016 or 2015, they spent 18% of that on hair and beauty products and other, you know, non-edible goods. 18%, $200 billion on hair and beauty. And I can only assume that the percentage of black people who are at the head of these industries is very, very small. Probably less than 1%. I went to this beauty supply spot. They had hair, wall-to-wall hair. It was a huge store. The biggest beauty supply store that I've been in recent times. For real, in recent memory, I can't think of any store that was bigger than this one. I mean wall-to-wall hair bundles, wigs. Of course, they had the fake Chanel and the fake Hello Kitty chains and shit, you know. They had some black women working there doing hair, and, you know, they was helping customers as well. Small victory in my eyes, of course, because, you know, I want to own everything. And you just see that it's just, you know, it's an Asian market for a demographic that never shops in there. Asians don't shop at beauty supply stores. Black people do. And when you're talking about almost $200 billion, black women should be eating. And I will say that, you know, the past couple years, women on Instagram and, you know, different forms of, you know, social media and the internet at large, they are getting the hair and all of that other stuff. But now, of course, if you're going to do that, you got to be the supplier. You got to be the one to supply that. Now, I personally do not get down with humans wearing other humans' hair and all that other stuff, but that's not my prerogative and I don't do it. So the people who do it, you like it, I love it. You know what I'm saying? Whatever. But black women definitely need to be at the head of it. Black, it's a fact that black women do most of the spending in black America. So because of that, you know, we definitely need our black women to be more, you know, business forward. And of course, I shouted y'all out for opening up businesses. So make sure that y'all cater to y'all own needs, supply y'all own needs, so that way y'all can keep y'all money in y'all community and be able to build bigger and bigger and bigger. Because, like, I'm in the store, and I'm pretty sure everybody has noticed this just throughout their lifetime, that all of these hair products have black models on them. You know, all of these, you know, products are represented and sold to black people. I've never seen these products anywhere else in the country, and I've gone plenty of places. Not as much as I want to. I got to travel more for sure. But every place that I went to that was not a black community never had any of these products, you know? It's very telling that black people just need to jump on it. You dig what I'm saying? So, in closing, man, y'all just got to understand that integration was not this great achievement that black people should really be proud of, because prior to, you know, despite what these, you know, liberals try to tell you or whatever, black people were closer. Black people were doing better for the time that they were in. If we would have carried those same principles from that time into today, we would all be rich. We would all be doing great. You know, Martin said it, you know, we would be top 10 nations just on our own, just our little population in America. That's how much we make a difference out in the world. Black Americans. You know what I'm saying? We would be rivaling these nations, you know. So if we keep that going, yo, we would, you know, have endless prosperity, you know, endless fortune, wealth, and health. So just pay attention to what you're doing. Pay attention to how you're conducting business. Pay attention to who you call your friends. Pay attention to where you spend your money. And pay attention to yourself, man. Love yourself. I stir the face. Yes, yes, y'all. We don't stop. That was episode 14, integration. So, pretty sure you guys learned something. I know I learned something, you know, just doing my research for this and just having some knowledge on hand and things of that nature. But also, while I was getting things together, you know, doing my editing, putting my commercials in, you know, all of that dope stuff that I love to do with my podcast, I was scrolling through Twitter, and one of the people that I follow, one of my followers, well, actually made a thread about integration and just his look on it. And I agree with him. And what he was saying was that it wasn't necessarily integration itself. It was the way black people behaved after it happened. It coincided with my message, and I appreciate him for saying it, because I did have a different little view, you know. Not to say that I was blaming white people, but I did blame black and whites coming together as one of the reasons, and not so much that black people weren't doing what they were supposed to do within integration. Because when you look at it today, like I said, interracial couples, people are already mixing. There's not too many pure blood, quote unquote, white or black people in America. That's just not how it goes. There's so much mixing that's been going on over the centuries that we just have to, you know, concede to the fact that we have a little bit of European in us. They got a little bit of African in them. It's just, you know, how it goes. And we can't allow the system of integration be the reason why we fuck up. That's not a good excuse. That's just basically a cop out. Now, there are certain things within that, you know, that allowed black people to get a little bit more lax when it came to building up their own industries and their own economic base. So that does still, you know, coincide with what my man was saying. But it is right. We always have to look at ourselves first and our behaviors, despite whatever's going on around us. You dig what I'm saying? So yes, even though that society is now integrated, we still can't let that be a reason why we fucked up or we didn't do what we were supposed to do. You dig what I'm saying? So thank you guys for listening to the episode. It's going to be another one coming and another one coming and another one coming after that. We out here for, you know, for the people, for real. We trying to get these solutions out there. And the more listeners that I get, the more solutions that be implemented in the community as fast as possible. So you make sure you guys share and let people know about the Intelligent Rebel Squadcast. Let them know about your boy Doe Dukes. Let them know about Black America, Anchor Trading.Nation. As you can see, my entire embodiment is about solutions and solving these problems that we have been facing for such a long time. So, thank y'all again, men. And as always, stay intelligent and stay rebellious. Squad. I'm feeling so much chronic, need a detox. I serve the base, I serve the base. I serve the base, I serve the base. You the one who ducking from a drive-by. My niggas unemployed, selling bye-byes.